Welcome to Culturetopia, NPR's roundup of the week's very best arts and cultural stories. I am Neda Ulibi, and this week we're looking back at Mardi Gras with music from the New Orleans funk band Galactic, and an interview with one of the city's A-list drummers. You'll also hear an interview with a pianist who connects the dots between jazz, rock, hip-hop, and soul. But first,
two pop stars generated an intense reaction when they collaborated on two new songs. Almost 3 years after singer Chris Brown was convicted of assaulting his then-girlfriend, singer Rihanna, they're back together, at least musically. The singers intentionally leaked remixes of two songs. Both are Rihanna-Chris Brown duets. NPR's Sam Sanders reports on a collaboration that includes some X-rated lyrics.
The speculation built for days. Rihanna might release a remix to one of her songs and feature Chris Brown. On Monday, her 24th birthday, Rihanna did it. She tweeted the remix to a track aptly titled Birthday Cake. And it featured the man who violently assaulted her.
And it's not even my birthday.
That same day, Chris Brown tweeted a remix to the lead single from his upcoming album. And yep, you guessed it, Rihanna was the featured guest on Turn Up the Music. The jaws of the internet collectively dropped.
Something is not right with them. These are two deeply disturbed individuals that probably need to get off Twitter and spend some time on someone's couch working it out.
Natalie Hopkinson is a contributing editor at TheRoot.com. Like many other writers online, Hopkinson was repulsed by the musical reunion. Headlines called the song stomach-turning and unbelievable. They critiqued the Rihanna song in particular for lyrics that blur the line between pleasure and pain and seem to almost allude to the assault.
Give it to her in the worst way.
The worst way.
Can't wait to blow candles out. I want to
For Hopkinson, it wasn't just the explicit nature of the lyrics or the message the pair's reunion might send about domestic abuse.
They're normalizing this incredibly abnormal and deviant behavior. And then on top of that, they're doing it for their own personal gain, the record company's personal gain, the blogger's personal gain, the clicks, the page views.
But Maura Johnston of The Village Voice says, wait.
I always am wary of attributing motives to people in pop, especially now when you have so many ways that you can disseminate a persona that aren't necessarily your persona.
And disseminating persona is something Brown and Rihanna are very good at. Both are staples of the blogosphere, and each has millions of Twitter followers who greeted the duo's new music with almost universal support. One of those Twitter followers was Charisse McGlone, a sophomore at Howard University in Washington, D.C. And for her, the duets were a sign of something more.
I feel like they've been back together for a while. They're just now letting, like, the public know.
And you're cool with that?
I'm cool with it. Like, I love black love.
Yeah, but it wasn't just about love.
The main goal of those songs were probably money. Publicity. Why not draw more attention to my song, generate more revenue? I would do it. Like, make some more money, you know? The public is going to eat that up.
Howard sophomore Earl King, a huge fan, agreed.
They're going to make money off of two good money. Good money. And it might cause some backlash, but their fans are going to support them.
Whether the songs were a wink, a kiss, or a money grab, Maura Johnston says she knows one thing about both remixes.
I don't think either of the songs is very good at all.
Not that that really matters at this point. Sam Sanders, NPR News.
And get ready to dance. It's Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday, a day to cut loose before Lent begins. In New Orleans, that means it's a day of parades, costumes, and music everywhere you turn.
We're listening to the New Orleans funk band Galactic, which celebrates the sounds of Mardi Gras in its new album, Carnival Electricos. Galactic has been together for almost 20 years now, and three members of the five-piece band join me from New Orleans. Ben Ellman plays sax and horns and harmonica. Hey, Ben.
How you doing?
Robert Mercurio plays bass.
Hey, happy to be here.
And Stanton Moore is on drums and percussion. Stanton, hi.
Hello.
Mardi Gras for you guys actually starts earlier than Mardi Gras, right? It starts on Monday. You have a Fat Monday tradition.
We have an annual gig that we play till the sun comes up at local club Tipitina's.
And that's one of the biggest nights in New Orleans. It's one of our biggest gigs of the year.
Stanton, you're playing through the night, all through, straight through, until the sun comes up.
Until the sun comes up. And then people go out and try to find the Indians, or they'll go out and line up for Zulu or whatever early thing that they want to do. But some of our older friends have started getting wise, and they'll actually go to sleep early, like 8 or 9, wake up around 4 or 5 a.m., and then come see us, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Now, Stanton mentioned go out and find the Indians, and let's talk about that. Ben, we're talking about Mardi Gras Indians and the new album, which leads us really through the whole day of Mardi Gras, the arc of how the day goes by, starts with a song called Harika.
That's Juan Pardo from the Golden Comanche tribe from New Orleans. He just represents one of the many tribes of Mardi Gras Indians, and they spend all year making these beautiful, beautiful suits, and they come out a couple times a year and show off and parade through the streets and do their thing.
I love listening to one of the songs, Karate, which features the Kip Renaissance High School Marching Band. Stanton Moore, how many kids are we talking about there?
Oh, I think there was about 40.
40. And as the drummer in Galactic, I imagine you're hearing the rhythm of those drums, and it's an incredible thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's what got me interested in playing drums in the first place, was my mom started bringing me to Mardi Gras parades when I was 8 months old. So
no
there are
kidding.
Pictures, you know, pictures of me from that first Mardi Gras in a clown outfit. No joke. As I got a little bit older, 3, 4, 5, I started to really be impacted by the drums coming down the street at the parades. And I took note of the excitement that people would get from the drums coming, and you would hear the drums first when the band was coming down the street. And I started hitting on everything I could find in the house. And I knew about them that I wanted to hit on stuff for a living.
Ben, what's it like to be out on the street for Mardi Gras and to see one of those marching bands heading your way? What's that feeling?
It's amazing. When you're watching a parade go by and there's a 100-piece marching band walking by you, it's just extremely powerful. And there's always, like, bass drum players, if you're lined up right on the street, that walk right by you and just, like, bash the bass drum in your face. And, and it's really exciting and powerful. And you can hear a lot of music Mardi Gras Day. I mean, it's not only that from parades, but depending upon where you are, you'll hear different things. You'll hear Indian some places, you'll hear marching band some places, you'll hear hip-hop all over the place, you'll hear Mardi Gras music. It's there's so much music.
Speaking of hip-hop, you have the song Move Fast.
Go, Mr. Go, go, Mr. Go, go. Hold up, look, I'm 40, baby, go slow. My back's sore, I can't party like that no more. Get off the floor, my knees won't let me get that low.
That's the world-famous Mystical. It's a revered rapper here in New Orleans, and also on the track is Manny Fresh, who is a producer.
And where would you be hearing hip-hop during Mardi Gras?
People will set up their pickup trucks or even box trucks. They'll put a box truck on the parade route and use that as their party headquarters, and they sometimes have small PAs blaring their music of choice. out the back of these box trucks.
Yeah, under the overpass, the freeway overpass too, you have like DJs set up, like sound systems and such, and yeah, it's a party.
Now you guys are the instrumental backup for singers who you brought in, and two of them are two of the Neville brothers, Cyril and Ivan Neville, doing this song called Out in the Street.
Once my feet hit Rainbow Street, yo, I'm where I need to be. Trumpets humming, snare drums are drumming, hear the rhythm of a tambourine.
It's a Tuesday everywhere else, but in New Orleans it's Mardi Gras. Everything's closed, the streets are packed, there's different kinds of parties everywhere, so you know, I find it really hard to stay home. I never have.
Everybody knows that it's time to go. Ain't no time to sleep. Gotta get out in the streets.
Well, all great things must end, right? So Mardi Gras leads into Ash Wednesday, and that's how you close the album with this song, Ash Wednesday Sunrise. Stanton, I think I can feel in my bones what you're feeling like the next morning.
Oh, you're just spent, and you had a great time, but you're also sort of glad it's over because it's so exhausting.
Ash Wednesday is sleep. That's what it is, sleep all day.
Stanton Moore, Robert Mercurio, Ben Elman, they are Galactic. Happy Mardi Gras, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Galactic's new album is Carnival Electricos. You can hear Galactic live in concert on Thursday night at nprmusic.org or with the brand new NPR Music iPad app.
The core of New Orleans music is the beat. The drum is the source from which it all flows, the jazz, the funk, the R&B, the jazz funerals. And there, pounding away at the heart of the New Orleans sound, you can find Shannon Powell. He's one of the greatest drummers this musical city has ever produced. But, like most drummers, he's not as well known as the trumpeters or clarinetists. And because John Burnett has the story of Shannon Powell.
Inside his shotgun house, Shannon Powell is playing a rhythmic definition of the city.
New Orleans drummers accent on the four. One, two, three, four. Two, three, four. Two, three, four. Two, three, four. One, two, three, four. You see what I'm saying?
It is said of Shannon Powell that he's part of this city's musical DNA, that he knows things that only New Orleans drummers know.
African rhythms, Brazilian rhythms, calypso, is all related. This beat here. That is the heartbeat to all the different rhythms that I just called out. You hear that?
The 49-year-old Powell is the A-list drummer in town. He's played with Wynton Marsalis and the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, with Dr. John, Harry Connick, Nicholas Payton, and R&B guitarist Earl King.
That's Brazilian. That's a Brazilian beat. Like a samba. Okay, but it's the same thing as
He got his start as a teenager with the legendary banjo player and guitarist Danny Barker.
You hear the bass drum?
Powell has also toured with jazz vocalist Diana Krall and jazz musicians John Scofield and Marcus Roberts.
See, all that music is related.
Perhaps that's the genius of Shannon Powell. It's all related. Currently, he fronts a contemporary jazz band called Powell's Place, with Jason Marsalis of the Marsalis Dynasty playing vibes. They say drumming is an essential part of the language of New Orleans. Kids walk home from school with drumsticks beating on the sides of buildings or pounding on cardboard boxes during parades. Powell does that too. Like the early New Orleans drummers, he spends a lot of time off the skins with rim shots, wood blocks, and cowbells. Powell is on his front porch laughing with his uncles while a riverboat announces its departure down on the Mississippi. He lives in the heart of one of the most famous musical precincts in America, the Treme, now the name of a hit HBO series. His house faces Louis Armstrong Park and Congo Square, where 2 centuries ago African slaves gathered every Sunday to drum and dance. Around the corner was the Caledonia Bar, where the great Professor Longhair lived in an apartment upstairs.
When I used to pass down there on the way going to school, I could hear Professor Longhair upstairs on the piano playing. And then right in this block here, before you get to the corner, there was a building, there was a house where Alan Toussaint had a studio. And the Meters was in there recording.
Gospel music wafted out the door of the sanctified church next to Powell's house. Jazz funeral processions passed by on the street on their way from the burial ground to the bar room.
See, I was surrounded by all of this music. Like my uncle said, I'm part of the source.
You are the source.
You know,
he are the source. That's what he is.
That's his uncle, Charlie Gabriel, a well-known clarinet and saxophone player. In terms of style, Shannon Powell would place himself staunchly among the traditionalists in food as well as music.
I think I'm going to have the red beans today with the white meat chicken and a little unsweetened tea.
He's having lunch at Willie May's Scotch House in the Treme, whose succulent cayenne-battered fried chicken is considered some of the best on earth. He seems to know everyone in the dining room.
How you been, man?
I've been good, Shannon, baby. It's
been a while, huh?
The drummer is known as something of a curmudgeon when it comes to New Orleans music. He complains about everybody from Trombone Shorty to the Rebirth Brass Band.
They're playing one style of music and calling it something else. Don't say we're playing traditional New Orleans music if you're playing rock and roll. That's what I'm saying.
He's not the only person in the history of New Orleans jazz that has said there needs to be the continuity of the tradition. I mean, continuity is a wonderful thing, but to keep a tradition alive, you have to create new sounds, new songs, new styles.
Nick Spitzer is a folklorist, New Orleans resident, and host of public radio's American Roots.
I would say Shannon is right there at the center of the rear guard, kicking the bass, playing the snare, and pushing everybody forward. That's a good role for Shannon to play. He's good at it. He does it with a smile on his face.
The house is packed at Preservation Hall in the French Quarter, the cathedral of traditional jazz in New Orleans. Tourists fill every square inch of the creaky old wooden floor. Powell sits at his drum kit, a great beneficent presence in a black beret with a gap-toothed grin. He leads the band here every Tuesday night.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, then without further ado, it is my privilege and honor to introduce Mr. Shannon Powell and the Preservation Hall Stars!
Though Powell plays every style of New Orleans music, this is where he feels most at home. He's an old-fashioned showman on the drums, like Louis Belson or Buddy Rich. Powell calls the tunes, cracks the jokes, picks the soloists, and mesmerizes the crowd, especially when he picks up a tambourine and testifies on it the way he learned from the sanctified church ladies.
I feel a spirit going on.
Dave Korkanowski, a renowned local jazz pianist, has played with Powell for 25 years.
Shannon Powell, what can I say, man? He is the embodiment of every great drummer that I love. He is the living history. He's the last of his kind. I mean, this town is the beachhead of African culture in America, and he is a direct, uncut descendant from that. I mean, the humidity is in his playing.
Shannon Powell will be playing at this year's Jazz Fest in late April, and his band Powell's Place has a new CD coming out soon. If you listen carefully, you can hear the humidity. John Burnett, NPR News.
Let's consider now some new research on rhythm. Rhythm in music is about timing, when notes start and stop, what makes for that swing. Scientists say they've found a curious pattern that's common to musical rhythm, and it's a pattern also found in nature. NPR's Christopher Joyce has the story.
Psychologist Daniel Levitin plays the saxophone. Lately, though, he's been feeding musical scores into a computer. 558 musical scores, in fact, spanning four centuries. And he found a pattern in their rhythms. It's produced by a mathematical equation that also creates patterns in nature. You can see it in a snowflake or the leaf of a fern, where the smallest part of an object repeats itself over and over again to create the whole. Scientists call these patterns fractals. And that kind of pattern is buried in the music's rhythms, whether it's Bach or Chopin. Levitin says you need a computer to reveal it.
When I try to think about that, my head starts to explode. But it's there. It's there in the mathematics, and it's there implicitly in the music.
Psychologists believe the human brain recognizes and responds to repeating patterns like this one in nature.
It seems as though composers have internalized these regularities of the physical world and are bringing them back out in their compositions.
Other scientists have seen this fractal thread in melodies, the distribution of the pitches of the notes, but it didn't differ much from one composer to the next. When it comes to rhythm, though, Levitin found that the pattern showed more variety. Composers, whether they knew it or not, seemed to have played around more with rhythm.
The rhythm is really what separates them. We found that Beethoven has the most predictable rhythms. Mozart has among the least predictable rhythms.
Each composer, in fact, had his own rhythmic signature. Some were quite similar to each other, but not the ones you might expect. Take Monteverdi, for example. Monteverdi wrote madrigals and operas in the 16th century, but mathematically, the rhythms of his music were more similar to Scott Joplin, the popularizer of ragtime and early jazz. Levitin points out that you can't really recognize the fractal patterns by listening to a few musical phrases. You need to analyze hours of music, but it's there.
So much so that if you were to give me a new, undiscovered piece by the composer, I think we could tell you which composer it was.
Not by listening, but by parsing the mathematical reason in its rhythms. Levitin's research appears in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. You can hear him play his sax with his band, Diminished Faculty, at McGill University in Montreal, where he's a professor. Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
This is the music of jazz pianist Robert Glasper. The thing you need to know about him is, firstly, he's a young man in a genre dominated by older ones. Glasper's 33. And the second thing, he's convinced jazz has hit a wall. It's too safe, even a bit boring. So Glasper's set out to change it. He takes soul, hip-hop, rock, classical, whatever feels interesting, and he throws it right into the mix.
Coming to your mind, live and direct from the ethers. Now it's all in your speakers, down to your sneakers.
His band is called the Robert Glasper Experiment, and this is off his new record. It's called Black Radio. The liner notes include what I guess you'd call a manifesto. It says in one place, "The collective dumbing down of our music is the greatest tragedy we can impose on generations to follow." And for that, Robert Glasper blames the tastemakers who control pop radio.
They just play the same five horrible songs. You know, it's all about what's hot now. And what is hot now, especially when it comes to African-American music, they choose the dumbest stuff to play sometimes. It's just like, really, you're going to play that? The guys are talking about the same, and the women are talking about the same things that don't mean anything, you know, degrading each other. And it's just bad, and the music's bad. But that sets the bar, because now everybody, since that gets a lot of radio play, everybody wants to get radio play. So now artists are coming out trying to do that exact same thing. And that's not cool, because we're going to lose a lot of great artists, because artists think you have to do this certain thing to be heard on the radio.
This is the question I have for you, Robert, because when you were a kid, pop music was Prince and Madonna and Michael Jackson and Whitney Houston, great, great artists. But I think one could argue that pop music today is pretty good. I mean, you've got some amazing singers, Adele, Rihanna, Nicki Minaj, you can go on and on. I mean, some would argue that there's actually a renaissance in pop music today.
There's a renaissance, but I wouldn't say everybody's really good. I would say the actual great singer is a lost art. There are very famous people. There are people who are characters and people who make it because they're different. But the actual art, like what their actual voice, like a great singer, there aren't as many great singers at that level as there used to be for me. You know, a lot of the people you name, like Nicki Minaj, is not a great singer.
She's a great artist in some ways.
She's an artist. And that's what I'm saying. You know, some people are artists, they're stylists, you know what I mean? Which is great as well. But I'm more speaking to the actual just art of singing. Mm. And I don't think that's the case nowadays, because nowadays it's not about how good you can sing. It's about really the song and how you look. So I'm trying to get away from that. And that's why everybody on my album, they're known for being great singers as well as stylists at the same time. You know, they don't sound like anyone else. Like Layla Hathaway, everybody who sings, who knows her, is like, she is that person. I think every artist I have on there is a jazz musician at heart, even if they've never sung a jazz tune in their life. Everybody kind of has a jazz backbone or jazz spine, or you know what I mean? And it made it easy to make this record. Ha, you're rocking. Yes, you are rocking with the fresh. You are rocking with the depth. You are rocking with the best. You are rocking with the yes. Now you are rocking with the fresh. You're rocking with the depth. You are rocking with the fresh. The yes.
I'm speaking with jazz pianist and composer Robert Glasper. His new record is called Black Radio. Probably the two most purely American forms of music, one could argue, are jazz and hip-hop, right? Both created by Americans, both created by African-Americans.
Right.
And yet rarely have those two forms of music met, right?
Right.
But you do that on this record very deliberately.
Right.
And yet it's still considered unorthodox and even shunned by some of your fellow jazz artists. Why?
Because they can't do it and they're jealous. Well, it's funny because, like, put it like this, it's like a person just not knowing their dad. That's not how it's supposed to be. Mm. Jazz is the father of hip-hop.
Yeah.
Without jazz, there would be no hip-hop. Without jazz, there would not be a lot of music. But without jazz, there definitely wouldn't be any hip-hop. So they go hand in hand. It's really, the question is, why hasn't it been done as much?
But here's the thing that I don't get, right? I mean, the history of jazz is about rebels, about people who were experimenting in ways that were pushing the boundaries. Like Miles Davis was doing things that were so radical, and exactly. yet today, I mean, the mainstream jazz community still finds it odd to hear hip hop and jazz together.
We kind of kill the alive to praise the dead, and I don't think that the jazz community embraces newer artists anymore. We get mad that new audiences don't want to come watch us play, you know, but it's like, you know, we keep sending our grandfather out to the playground.
Hmm. In other words, you keep playing standards. I mean, you're asked to play standards when
that kind of vibe and that kind of mindset. You know what I mean? Everybody else is sending their kids out to the playground. They're sending new sound, new vibrant life out into the world. And we keep sending our grandfather out and wondering why nobody wants to play with us. We have to embrace our new sounds because that's what it's always been doing. You know, that's why jazz kept changing. It always changed. You know what I mean? It's supposed to change. It's about being relevant and taking from my surroundings now. I know some jazz musicians are like, oh, you're selling out. But when you think about it, I'm not selling out. I'm doing what Train and Miles were doing. I'm doing what Herbie does. Herbie's still doing it. You know, that's not selling out. He's selling out venues. if that's what it means, then cool. If my thing is, if Train came back to life right now, you know, he'd be mad as hell if people were still doing the exact same thing he was doing when he died.
Well, Robert Glasper, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's pianist and jazz composer Robert Glasper. His new album with the Robert Glasper Experiment is called Black Radio. It's out on Tuesday, but right now you can listen to every track from the record for free at our website, nprmusic.org.
That's it for this week. As usual, you'll find links to these stories and a way to subscribe to this podcast at npr.org/culturetopia. I am Neda Ulibi. Thanks for listening to Culturetopia. So long.